Welcome to Allison's Wonderland. I'm your host, Allison Packard. Join us as we journey through the looking glass and down the rabbit hole into the wild and wonderful world of animation and video games. Hey, do a girl a favor and please subscribe to this podcast and go on iTunes and leave us a good review. If you like the show, please help spread the word. It really helps us to get heard by more people. Thanks so much.
Hey, Wonder Fam. My name is Allison Packard, and this is Allison's Wonderland. Welcome back to the show that takes you inside the world of animation and video games. Today's guest got his start working on animated movies like Pocahontas and Tarzan, and today is the current supervising director of Firebuds for Disney+. Please give a warm welcome to the one and only animator, Rob Pratt. Rob, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming.
My pleasure.
Doing my research and, you know, studying about your career, I was so impressed with how much passion you bring to your work.
Oh, thank you.
And it's something that you talk about a lot as well for up-and-coming animators and people that want to work in the animation industry. Something that really shows and shines is when somebody has passion. And I really think that that kind of mirrors what I see in your career. So I'm really excited to sit down with you and chat more about your illustrious career.
Oh, thank you. Well, and I think passion is what inspires people. And that's what inspires me when I love things. I love seeing people do what they're good at. I was never even really a big NBA guy, but when Michael Jordan was doing his thing, I got to check this guy out. He's like the best at what he does.
Yeah.
And it's awesome because he loves the game. And so I think we're all inspired by people that love passionately what they do.
Yeah, man, just do it, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're here for.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about your early days. You grew up in Los Angeles.
Yeah, North Hollywood, pretty close to where we are right now. we're in NoHo right now.
Huh?
Yeah. And, you know, life's a thing of bad luck and good luck. Born a little bit rough. Like, I had a single mom, and she suffered from mental illness, so we were on food stamps and government support, and that's bad news. But the good news is we were just a stone's throw from the Walt Disney Studio, and that gave me a big, giant bullseye to aim for.
Yeah.
So, and I passionately loved cartoons early on in life. I feel bad for anybody who grows up and they don't know what they want to do, or they struggle with what they do. In kindergarten, I was telling kids, when I grow up, I'm going to be an animator at Walt Disney. Like, I knew what I wanted to do. So that's the good luck that came, you know, with it.
So were you drawing a lot even at that young age?
All the time. Drawing all the time. My mom had her piano, and she had her little piano bench. And I remember I put on, here locally in L.A., Tom Hatton hosted 3 glorious hours of Popeye cartoons every Sunday morning.
Ooh.
And I would put that thing out, and I had my drawing paper and my crayons and everything, and I was copying the Popeyes and all that stuff.
It's so funny.
Drawing all the time.
In Tinder, I would wake up and watch Captain Bob, which is on in the East Coast.
Oh, yeah.
Do nature drawings. It's like wake up at 5:30 in the morning and do my like nature drawings.
Oh, really? That's sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then you kind of got involved in the Animation Guild, huh?
Yeah, and see, that's again luck. So growing up poor, I didn't have a whole lot of options on education, but I would ride my bike through North Hollywood, and I would see this building when I got more aware of Cartoonist Union, local or whatever, and I kind of, I wonder what that place is, and I investigated it. Turns out it's a union headquarters, and they give classes at night. Now, they're not accredited. I would never get a degree, but now you're learning from guys that are Disney animators during the day. They want to earn a few extra bucks. Ruben Aquino was one of my first teachers. He's the guy that animated Ursula and So you're getting like hands-on first, you know, knowledge connection. Hey, what's going on at the studio? Well, we're working on this movie, Lion King. It's got a villain named Scar, so you know what he's got on his face then. You were getting a pimple, right? So you're getting insider info. Oh, Wendy, are things going to get busy there? You think they'll be hiring? So it was just great to, you know, take those courses at night and get on my way.
Wow. So were you still in high school?
Yeah, this is right about the end of high school when you're thinking, okay, school's ending and I got to get to like, I'm going to be getting in the real world pretty soon. So I better get on it.
It's like a soft landing. I bet you made a lot of contacts while you were there.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. And I'd always heard about people that got to go to really great schools like CalArts or anything. It wasn't just the information that you were getting. It was the contacts you were making. You're making friends. They're going to get in the industry. They're going to help you out. They're going to tell you who's hiring. It's getting in that whole clique of friends. So I did get a little bit of my clique of friends just from that, too.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. And so you were getting started in the 90s, 2D animation, and the golden era, some say, of Disney. What was it like coming into that world? What was the energy like?
I'm like, it's so hard to describe how big it was.
Tell me.
I mean, this is pre, like, Pixar hadn't done Toy Story yet. There was no DreamWorks yet. Like, Disney was unquestionably, like, the big place.
Yeah.
And they came off these monster hits. I mean, if you count, like, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, then Little Mermaid.
That's Disney.
And then Beauty and the Beast got bigger. Yeah. And Aladdin got bigger. And Lion King got bigger. It was just this momentum. And so I got... getting hired, I just can't believe my first stepping on that lot for my first day for orientation. And it wasn't just my first day at Disney. It was my first day I wasn't poor anymore. Aww. And so I feel like I'm getting all this pixie dust put on me that day. And you meet friends with other people or you talk, you know, at lunchtime during the orientation. And a lot of them were kind of stuffy business types. And they were rolling their eyes and being cynical about all the pixie dust.
Aww.
But at that table, I just went, no, this place is like a world famous. Anywhere in the world you go, they know Disney and what Disney makes and how it affects American culture. And I think I kind of Ted Lassoed them with like super positivity, and they all started getting excited about being there because it was wonderful. And every week, I mean, you found like a baseball cap or a T-shirt on your desk because times were going so well. And we were treated like kind of Jedi Knights for a little
while. Wow. Did they bring in lunch?
We'd get lunches when things got busy. And then, you know, we'd have our like crunch periods where you're almost finished. You're almost animating half the film in the last 6 months. And you just live at the studio.
Yikes.
And so they start catering dinners for you there. And it was awesome. It was great. But everybody was so invested. Everybody loved it.
Uh-huh.
And this is all, you know, 25 years plus years ago. I still keep in touch with these animators because we really bonded over that time. We all wanted to do that since we were little kids. And we got there. And it was just beyond description how great it was. I would have done it for the next 80 years if they let me.
Were you working crazy hours?
Yeah. And, you know, I was unattached at the time, didn't have family yet. And this is my, you know, growing up poor gave me that really strong work ethic.
Yeah.
I don't know how long this is going to last. I got my foot in the door. I'm going to make the most of it. I lived at the studio and it was better than my apartment anyways. I'd rather be at the studio. And so I would do the required work of me. I got lucky to be. I was in cleanup, but I was put on the Pocahontas character because you could specialize in one character, just master drawing that character. And so I got to be on Pocahontas, and you had this demand of getting these cleanup drawings through the day. And then I'd go eat dinner, and then I'd come back and all night work on personal tasks. And, oh, you know, I love baseball. What does it look like when a baseball player swings a bat, starts running to first? I'm going to start animating that because now I have all these animators, these Disney legends that I can show my work to and get feedback and start learning from. So I just worked tirelessly and, like I said, lived at the studio for those first couple of years.
So for those of our listeners and viewers that aren't familiar with 2D animation and hand-drawn animation, can you just give us a little overview of that process?
Yeah. So, you know...
because it's almost unbelievable.
Yeah. You almost... even me growing up watching cartoons didn't... I don't know if I fully grasp how labor-intensive it is. You just see a moving drawing and it should look flawless if somebody's good at their job. But no, like all this like squash and stretch and anticipation and movement and overshoot and then settle. It's pretty intense. And it's 24 frames of film. If you want that smooth quality, you've got to do a frame. You got to do a drawing for each one of those frames. So you're doing 24 drawings in the time it says takes to say 1 second. That's 24 drawings to get that fluid movement. If a character is a little bit more still, you can expose each drawing twice.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're only doing 12 drawings per second. So there is that. And then you have a system where, you know, the drawings were registered on a peg bar. So each drawing is registered to each other. And you had paper that went in between all your fingers and you can now roll it and kind of see the movement happening.
Oh my gosh.
And then scratch away at what the next movement's going to be, roll it. And it just it becomes almost this nervous tick that you do. And it's just wonderful. I remember bringing my sister for a tour of the studio and she's like marveled at like, oh my God. You can hear like all the papers rolling and on the desks. And it was just this magical place, you know, that it doesn't really exist so much anymore here in Hollywood. But that was fantastic. I loved it.
Yeah.
And I still love it so much. You grow up and you don't believe in magic anymore. But when I see a drawing that's alive and moving, it can make me feel an emotion like laugh or cry. That's still like magic to me. So I still draw on my own. I still have to do traditional animation because I just love it so much.
It's great. And tell us about your desk setup at home.
Yeah. So the good, man, maybe this will be a theme of our talk. Like, yes. There's bad luck and there's good luck. When it looked like, you know, the writing was on the wall, Toy Story came out, the whole Shrek and all of those movies came out, and boom, the industry is going to change. It's going to go CG.
The change is that we're going CG, we're going to computer generated animation instead of having animators come in and draw those 24 frames. So
that's right.
Basically, what AI is doing to voiceover, what we keep reinventing with technology, shifting the need for human labor.
Yeah.
And so what was that like?
That was scary. They did screen Toy Story at work for us, and we all loved it. And I can't remember which animator friend of mine, but I remember walking out and my friend going, well, we're all going to be out of work in a few years. And I thought, no, it looks different. And it looks different from what we do. If anything, stop motion's dead. You know, they won't do that anymore. But what we do looks so different. But my friend was kind of right. At least, you know, as far as terms in Disney and Hollywood, everything shifted to CG. And then you have to adapt. This is kind of like cavemans now, right? If we were all going to the same mountain ridge and we were hunting buffalo and bringing big buffalo home and feeding our families and we loved it, but then everybody found out about that ridge and now we go and there's less buffalo. Well, you're either going to have to make a better weapon than the next person, or you have to go, go somewhere else.
You do too.
Yeah. Find your own thing. You have to adapt. And so good luck, bad luck. I was lucky enough to be in the era, I'm in a sweet spot. If I were 10 years older, I might have had a hard time adapting to digital. Mm-hmm. If I were 10 years younger, I would have never gotten a taste of rolling drawings and making like traditional animation happen.
Yeah.
So I just feel, you know, it was sad. It was heartbreaking when that ended, but I feel so fortunate that I even got to experience it.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. So, and getting back to what you said, so my setup, when these CG movies came out, and then you saw not only they were hits, studios could replicate hits, have more than one hit. Nobody had ever really done that in traditional animation except for Disney.
Meaning part one, part two.
Yeah, like maybe Don Bluth would have a big hit with Land Before Time, but it was hard to have a second hit or a third hit. And that's the closest runner-up to Disney. Mm-hmm. There'd be a lot of studios that had a hit and couldn't get a second hit. Disney was the only one that could do it over and over. But now CG comes in and we're seeing multiple hits. I'm like, okay, this is a different animal now. So it's going to change. And now Disney's like, we have to go CG. We have to do it. So a lot of us, 300 of us or so, were getting laid off. And I said, gosh, you know, heartbreaking.
In all departments, or mainly just animators?
Mainly animators. You still need story people and designers. But so it's mainly hit the animators and the cleanup artists, which are animators too. So as this was happening, I was very sentimental. And I said, I feel like I was part of this big hiring thing. You bought the desk. You needed new desks. I'm the only one that used this desk. Can I buy it on my way out? I want to own it. And they said yes. And that made me very happy and very sad at the same time, because I thought, I get to have my desk. Oh, if they're selling the desks, they're not going back to traditional animation. Or they'd be like, that's it. But I have that desk at home, and that's, you know, I animate on that desk still to this day. And that's that thing I will treasure for my whole life.
That's amazing.
You know.
So after Disney, what was next in your career?
Yeah, so now it's, you know, I'm 10 years old.
And now we're back at Disney, but we'll get there.
Yeah, I have to reinvent myself. So I had kind of a crossroads where Disney was doing the right thing. They were training us on CG, how to move. You'd get a puppet, and now you can time it and make the performance and animate it and make it happen. And so I was doing that, and I thought, oh, well, gosh, 10 years of like drawing and learning how to draw at a certain level, and I can't market myself with that anymore. I'm going to jump now into a pool of people that know the computer maybe better than I do. I'm going to stick to drawing. And that'll put me into story. Like I said, you still need story artists who kind of map out the shots.
And just so that we're aware, how would you define story artist? Because there's the story team, the writers, storyboarders. Is story artist meaning the borders?
Yeah, storyboard artist, okay. Same thing. Yeah, it's pretty much visualizing the script, right? So it's written, it's a written script. Now, what are the shots going to be? When is this going to be a close-up? When is this going to be a wide shot? When is this going to be a punch in on a hand? That's a storyboard artist has to, you know, read that script and now visualize it. And not just each shot, visualizing it as a sequence. How does this shot lead into this shot, lead into that shot? Like a great Beatles song just seems so, these melodies just go so effortlessly one into the other. You want your sequence, you want your shots to do that. So that was like a whole new world that I had to learn now 10 years older. struggled mightily. And, you know, it was hard. All the animators wanted to get into that story thing, but there wasn't enough room for everybody. So I didn't make the cut to do that feature. I got let go. I went to Nickelodeon for a year to do it. Like I said, on Danny Phantom.
Okay.
And I could say it now because it turned out well. Butch Hartman, the creator of Danny Phantom and a big name in this business,
yes,
was hard on me.
Oh.
It looked like I was going to get fired. And not because he knew I was trying. I was staying until 2-3 in the morning. I didn't know cinematic language yet. I didn't know how shots connected to each other yet. So I was getting, you know, Pab, we're union, and I was getting a union written notice that, you know, if you get two more of these, you're gone. What am I going to do? But then you lean on friends and, you know, a roommate that I had there, Shant Nigagosian, kind of turned on some lights for me. But no, he would look at my boards. No, this, you can't cut from this to that. That's confusing. Oh, your screen directions all go screen right, but in this one, it's going screen left. Mm. I got like this kind of like mentoring again at in the story department. And then once I got that, because I love this stuff so much, I watch movies in a different way. And then my storyboard career, you know, kind of took off. I went back to Disney. Before you knew it, I was a storyboard supervisor and then directing shows maybe within a couple of years, just because I love it so much.
So boarding, that would be you get the script and potentially the voiceover is recorded and you can hear the audio. And then you are designing the way the shot looks. Is that right?
Yeah, designing the shot. Yeah, you will have designs on the look of the characters and the environment. But yeah, you are composing that shot. Yeah.
And then the editor, which this is something I've... They then edit the boards. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Say when you come in and out of different
shots. Right. Yeah, to kind of troubleshoot is your... Because this is kind of like the blueprint for what the production will be. So to troubleshoot it, yeah, well, let's edit just the drawings. We'll put those actors' voices that we already have and maybe even some sound effects and music. And then we could kind of, you can kind of watch it and see if it's playing, make adjustments like, oh, this story beat's not clear enough. Oh, this is redundant. We don't need both. Let's keep the stronger of the two, get rid of the redundant. And you can kind of craft it from there. And it kind of evolves over time until you're ready to go into production or you run out of time and it goes into production. Yeah.
As is.
Right.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, this is Allison Packard. Sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to let you know that if you like the show, please, please, please remember to subscribe to this podcast and leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps us to get heard by more people. Thanks so much.
Wow. And so you moved your way up from board to board supervisor. Now, how many people are generally working boards on an animated series?
Yeah, for television, we would have, it's generally about 9 storyboard artists. Whoa. It can go as high as 12. Because in television, I mean, gosh, in a feature, let's say like Moana, you have 5 years to make this 70 minutes of footage. Mm. You get into television, and in 1 year, you've got to do 25 half an hours. Like, you have to
Or 54,
11. Yeah. So you have a bigger team and the episodes have to piggyback on each other because each one of them isolated probably takes about 9 months to produce. Mm-hmm. So to get a whole series out, you've got to piggyback.
Going through the pipeline, just moving on through. So story's kind of like one of the early steps then.
Yeah. And it's great. You know, I would have liked to have been in feature. That was where I was as an animator and spent some happy years. But I have to say, being in that TV environment where you're moving fast, I learned faster. And because in feature, when you're only working on that 70 minutes of footage for 5 years, you get a sequence, you get to rework that sequence. We rework that sequence. You're constantly problem solving the same thing. Whereas in TV, it's new things every time.
Uh-huh.
And you might watch one and go, shoot, I dropped the ball on that one.
Yeah.
I'll do better on the next one because there's always the next one. But you learn faster that way.
That's so interesting. So that's why shows really kind of get cranking after.
Yeah.
Wow. And so we went to Nickelodeon. And then from there, maybe you could tell us a little bit about what it's like being a supervising director. Because, you know, a director on a film set is very different than a director in animation. We sometimes think, oh, that they're directing the voice actors, but that's not always the case.
Right. Yeah. And one, I guess maybe the major difference too, or one of the many differences, maybe I wouldn't say the major, one of the many differences, when you're shooting live action, you're shooting first. You shoot everything.
Yeah.
And then you bring it in the editing room and you're editing it after.
Mm-hmm.
In animation, we can't animate that much footage. So we're kind of editing it first in the storyboard process. We only need these shots from these angles, and then you animate it from there.
Can't be like, let's cut to the wide. We don't have a wide.
That's right.
It's not on the board.
Yeah. So then now in animation, so you're kind of directing from that point of view. You're kind of directing the pre-production, which is getting the designs, color, backgrounds, storyboards all together. Then you go into production. Now you're giving notes on the animation and how it moves. Meanwhile, and then you're, for me, now, and that's when you're directing. Now that I'm supervising directing, I've got two directors under me that I supervise them. They get their, they deal with their storyboard artists, although I'm in for the story pitch and can give input. But ultimately, they get the one-on-one time with them. I try to hone the board. They go into editorial, meaning they cut it into an animatic, which is that cut that you can watch.
Like a, it almost looks like a drawing of the, it looks like a sketch of what you're going to see.
And then
sometimes there's VO in that or scratch.
There is. Yeah. For us, always.
Just temporary.
Yeah. So now they get it as far as they can. And then an editorial, then I'll look at it with them, give them additional notes. Then they'll try to hone it together more until we're ready to send it to production and television. Because of that amount of footage, we can't animate it in-house. We send that to, we have a studio in Canada who has a big crew that can handle all the episodes. We'll get it back in for post-production. And now I can make notes on animation, on layouts. We do any picking up of voices where, oh, we didn't know that in this action sequence, we were going to need someone to go, push on. We better get the actor in again to get those things. So it's all about putting the music on, the finishing touches.
Great. And so right now, I'm assuming you're talking about Disney's Firebuds.
Newer-ish
show that you're working on.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about Firebuds?
Super cute show about, you know, there's talking vehicles has been done before, but the angle on ours is talking vehicles coexist with humans. They even live in the same house together. They work, play, and live together. And so that's the kid fantasy angle of any kid who had a little fire truck that loved it. Imagine if that fire truck was big enough and you could go and drive and go on adventures and it's your best friend.
Yeah.
So that's, and then they all are first responders. You know, one's a fights fires, one's an ambulance, one's a police officer, and they're doing things that they can, all from their different philosophies to solve problems and help people.
Yeah. And because it's a preschool show, it has sort of an educational component, not like a shove down your throat, but just those beautiful kind of notes to self on how to be a good person.
Right.
Which I love. Yeah. But, you know, preschool, it's not limited by it being just for younger kids. Certainly anybody 3, 4, 2 could easily watch it, but I watch it with my son. He's 7 and we love it.
All right. That's great.
Yeah,
thank you.
Super cute. And the characters are just so fun and a lot of music and stuff.
Yeah, the music's great, huh? Catchy songs. We're always getting those songs stuck in our head.
Do you have one composer you work with on the show, or is it multiple composers?
For songs, it's Bo Black, who has that gift for melody, because you hear the song once, and now you know the melody in your head. And then for our score is Freddie Weedman, who is awesome. He scores some Star Trek stuff that I hear is fantastic, so it's all big and epic, and he also gets melody. And we try to give characters their own little leitmotifs that come in to make it fun. Or Jaden is our little tech guy. We put a little tech music for him when he comes in. Okay. It's super fun.
Were you involved with that project right from the pitch?
A little bit. I worked on Elena of Avalor with the series creator is Craig Gerber.
Yeah,
so we worked 5-6 years together on Elena of Avalor. So we had already a working relationship. Mm-hmm. And then as that show was winding down, I got into development for a little bit. Looked like I was kind of developing some things that might go.
Uh-huh. Your own projects.
No, at Disney.
Oh.
And then, you know, but it's Hollywood. You know, things don't happen. And so thank goodness he was there and still hiring and said, hey, I'm sorry this thing didn't go through, but you could come work with me on this. So I missed a little bit of the pre-production on Firebuds because I was off doing other stuff. But I came in early enough to, you know, well before we were producing the episodes.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Wow. So compared to some of the stuff that you did in 2D, do you have a preference between what you're doing now and what you were doing back on Pocahontas days?
Yeah, you know, I do love both. It's funny because it can be that, you know, Star Wars or Star Trek. You can be like one camp or the other. I do love both. I think for me personally, when I work, because I've invested so much time in drawing, I love doing my own 2D. But I'll do CG stuff. You know, Carman, I will have a car that's in CG. And I love the control CG gives you, and you can move the camera more. Mm-hmm. One of the challenges when you did 2D on a big scale and you needed large teams, I think on Pocahontas, there must have been 10 animators and 20 cleanup animators. So for everybody to conform and make it look seamless, like one person drew everything, that's a challenge. In CG, you don't have that. The model is built. The model is going to look the way the model looks. So I kind of like that, especially in TV when we're working fast. I like that Bo is always going to look like Bo. Flash is always going to look like Flash.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry that somebody drew it off model, you know, incorrectly. So yeah, it's kind of like a mix. I like both.
It's great that you were able to adapt.
Yeah, thank goodness, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'd say, gosh, maybe my favorite animated movie might be The Incredibles. I love that thing. The script is great. The animation's great. The art direction, the score. I love everything about it. And it's CG, you know, so I do love both.
Yeah. So I know, you mentioned Carman. Let's talk about Carman.
Yeah.
You have some very interesting creative projects which you post. You also have a YouTube channel, so we can shout that out.
Thanks.
But tell us a little bit about some of your passion projects. Let's start with Carman.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, you've got to. There are times at work, I so passionately love what I do, and we all get notes where we're like, no, that note is wrong. And I would get so frustrated. And I bitch and moan to my friends. And then I started doing my own personal work. And boy, it created this balance in my life where I'm like, oh, that's right. Professionally, they're paying me to do this. I'll do whatever they want. Why get all worked up? When I go home, I can animate the way I want to. And so then I'm also learning more that will apply to professional work. So I implore any artist out there that's working professionally, you got to do the personal artwork. It's just good for your artist soul. So now I've been doing Carman for years and years. I grew up here in LA, car capital of the world, traffic. I think I'm a laid back, nice guy, but I get road rage and I get mad. And I notice how we all kind of dehumanize people when they're driving. We're not even really mad at a person anymore. We're mad at that car. So I thought, well, let's like make a fun character who gets pissed off and does all the things that we wish we could do, but we know better. We won't do that. Carman will do those things.
I want like a bullhorn in my car, like, what the hell are you doing?
Yes, that would be great. Maybe I might steal that from Carman. But yeah, so I've been animating that for years and years. But part of it was also learning how to put a film together. And I storyboarded it way too long. I storyboarded it's like a 7 minute thinking, well, a Bugs Bunny short's about 7 minutes. That's what I want to do. And then I realized, oh, when you're on your own, that's going to take forever. And so I would put it aside. There was a time, you know, we go through career highs and lows, and I was going through a low around 2010. I was really kind of frustrated with opportunities that I felt I had earned, but I wasn't getting, and I was down, and I didn't like feeling that way. Mm-hmm. But I'm a Superman fan, like crazy.
Yeah.
And I live here in LA. I run into this guy, John Newton. I recognize the guy. He played Superboy on TV when I was a kid. So I went and introduced myself. Sean and I hit it off. We were still friends. And I thought with this frustration, I'm like, I have my Disney desk at home. I can animate whatever I want.
Yeah.
I want to animate a Superman thing. Yeah. Like 1930s, World War II era Superman.
Like your own take on it.
Yeah. But a mix of things. Like there's a lot of like Fleischer Superman for anybody who knows that. But then that's early enough where he didn't have supervillains yet. And then I wanted the Christopher Reeve, you know, Clark Kent that pushes his glasses up. Like it was a Superman of the ages, you know?
Yes.
So I started, I pitched it to John Newton. I'm like, I want to do this. I found a piece of music that's Superman related. I'm going to animate to it so it'll look like it's scored to picture. And John, before I could even ask, he's such a great guy. Hey, I'll do the voice if you want. So now I got a real Superman.
Amazing.
So I put Carman aside for a while, did that Superman, because now it was only a 1 minute short. Like that's that's more manageable.
Yeah.
And that I had things to learn. It was not just storyboarding and animating. Now I had to learn the technical things. How do you get it like composited in the computer? How do you output it from the computer? I had to learn all that stuff.
Ooh.
So once I learned that and made that, and then
how did you learn that? Just side note, were you like YouTube tutorials?
Or, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of YouTube tutorials, asking friends. Mm-hmm. Luckily, being in the business, I'd come up with an editing problem, but then I'd go to work and ask my editor, how do you compress this shot, or where it doesn't look compressed, but it's less, you know,
yeah.
I'd get all the information. And then once I learned how to make that, and then I did a Flash Gordon one because I was kind of stuck in that 1930s era. And then now it's like, okay, now I'm going to go back to Carman because I kind of know technically how to do it and see what I can polish Carman up with. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. And talk to us about Eva Stronger.
Yes. And this is more like put the positivity out there.
Yeah.
Because of the internet and Instagram and Facebook and all that, I posted Superman and outpouring of positivity was great. All the Superman websites publicized it. So now before you know it, Variety wrote me up, Hollywood Reporter wrote me up, The Howard Stern Show called me. So I'm making all this positivity from, I don't think I got really much negativity in the, in internet can be full of negative people.
Yes.
It was embraced so well. But the best thing was this pop artist named Des Taylor in London said, I love this. I love your work. Here's my work. And Des is kind of in that same kind of World War II aesthetic. Maybe his is a little bit more pinup and fun.
Uh-huh.
But he's from England, but he'll come out to San Diego Comic-Con to sell his stuff. So we met in person. And then Des, several years ago, said, Rob, I'm not into story. I'm visuals. But I made these two characters. I've named them, but I don't have their story. But it's Eva Strongbird and the Marine. And it was a beautiful woman that looks kind of like Veronica Lake. And this handsome man with a kind of a mask on. And I just, you know, was learning about story at Disney, and I had kind of written some Bugs Bunny shorts for Warner Brothers, and I'd written a couple Tinkerbell shorts for Disney. But I never wrote like a long form story. So I'm like, Des, let's do it. Let's do a graphic novel together. And so for these last few years, I've been writing it, and then I'll storyboard it out. Des will get it. He'll clean it up because his artwork is so much more beautiful than mine. And then he gets the deal with Titan Comics. It looks like maybe they might publish us this year.
Cheers.
Yes, yes. Cheers to NT. How appropriate. British.
French.
Yes.
To Des.
So I'm very excited about it. And then, you know, I kind of wrote the script out as a 90-page, thinking, hey, if this takes off, I've got a movie script that I can pitch as an animated
right
movie.
Yeah.
That's where my eye is on the animation prize. So I've turned in half of the roughs for the whole thing's laid out and drawn, and now it's in Des's wonderful hands now.
Amazing.
And I told Des, I already have these. They're kind of like storyboards. I'm going to get some actor friends, and I'm going to put their voices on them, and I got a composer and put music on, and I'm going to make an animatic of this. I might even animate a shot here and there. Ask some of my old Disney colleagues if they want to play in the sandbox.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a super fun project to have. And it's fun to have a partner in crime on this where, you know, Carman is great. It's on my own.
Yeah.
And that's great. I've got nobody to answer to. But it's fun to have a partner to work on something with. And Des would send me, you know, really great inspiration. He's got a very, you know, maybe because he's from England, a very more European look at it. He'll send me articles of that time that are like fascinating things about people.
That's cool.
So it's been super fun, and I love it, and I hope everybody loves it when it comes out.
Yeah, where are you at in the process with the animatic stuff? Or is it all
the animatic? I have two voices recorded, and like I said, the drawings are done. So, and I've got a couple actors lined up, and so we'll see how long that takes. Because boy, anybody who gets anything made outside, I praise them. It's hard to do. Everybody on their off time, you know, so even I have to wait maybe longer than I'd like to get a voice recording to come back. But I get it. I'm busy, too.
Right.
So it just takes forever. But I'll just do my best to get it done, you know, as passionately as I can. And it's very much in that pulp Flash Gordon, Superman, you know, Indiana Jones vein. That's fun. But it has a theme, a message that a character has to learn and hopefully has some deeper meaning. And to make it really poignant and meaningful to people, even though it's a period piece, you have to find kind of a timeless message that we can all relate to.
That's amazing. So then what do you think is the key to staying passionate in your career as an artist over years of time?
Yeah, that is a challenge. That's another one of the challenges, because you do something you love, and then when you're passionately invested into it, a lot of people are. A lot of people want to play in that. And then professionally, you're going to probably get your butt kicked here and there, and there's going to be highs and lows in the industry. And there are times, you know, cynicism is always trying to creep its way in. And so I think a lot of it for me is that personal work, connecting with artists, other artists like Des. Now we have a cherished friendship that came from this. It's trying to do anything that you can do to remember the positivity and why you did it in the first place, and having a level head about taking the hits. But even for me, it is a challenge. I have down times too. But then, you know, it kind of goes back to maybe my childhood, where I told you, like, it was hard as a kid. It was hard being poor. That was really hard. And only having a single mom who sometimes you couldn't count on her, the poor thing. Because she would have breakdowns and there was nobody else. Maybe that's why I love drawing so much. That was an escape. That was a way to make me happy. And it's still with me now. When I'm down, I can go and I can draw fun stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the passion is just innate. It's innately there.
Yeah. Yes. And find other people that share it with you, because it kind of tends to grow when you share it with others.
And we can reconnect to that. I think just in listening to you speak, it helps me reconnect
Great.
To where my passions are.
Yeah, wonderful. I love that.
Yeah. Well, Rob, it has been so lovely chatting with you. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
I loved it. Thank you so much.
Hey, and thank you guys so much for tuning into Allison's Wonderland. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to Allison's Wonderland, where we explore the wild and wonderful world of animation and video games. Please remember to subscribe and leave us a review. For more episodes of Allison's Wonderland, please visit us at www.allisonpackard.com. See you next week.